We're holding Pei Dalit Omid Bey's four lines from the bottom. Continuing on this topic of, we started talking about the Mishnah had talked about, and then we have several cases involving grabbing, doing tfisa on property that was left over by somebody who passed away and still had debt. So another case, Yemer Bachoshu have a masik beizuzibahu gavra. Yemer Bachoshu, that was his name, was owed money by a certain person. Shachiv, that certain person passed away. Hello. Veshavik arba, he left over as part of, he left over as part of the estate a boat. Well, that's worth money. Amalei the shluchi to Yemer Bachoshu says to his shliach, zil tafsin yalei. Go grab it and go grab it on my behalf, and then I can use it to sell it to pay the debt. Ozel tafsa. So sure enough, the shliach goes and grabs the boat. The papa and Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua met up with this guy as he was in the process of grabbing the boat. Omrulay, and they told him, no good. At tofus lebal chayv b'makom shechav l'acherim. You're not the only one. The guy who sent you, Yemer Bachoshu, is not the only person that this person who passed away owed money to. He also owed money to us. So you are grabbing on behalf of a Baal Chayv in a case where he owes other people as well. And that doesn't work. You're not koine in that case, because what's the idea behind that you're able to be a shliach to be tofus on behalf of a Baal Chayv? It's the idea, zochen l'adam, that you can be causing a schus for somebody, even shloi b'fanav, just as his shliach. In this case, though, you're also, by doing that, you're causing a chayv to other people, because you're causing that other people are not going to be able to collect their debts. Therefore, you don't have the right to do that.
Even the other people, not necessarily preceded from, or even speaking...
Doesn't matter, yeah. Because metaltalin are not, we talk about when one precedes the other, that has to do more with karka. Here we're talking about a boat of metaltalin. But
leaving him in the reshus of the other guy who owes the debt. Doesn't do the second party any good either.
No, but wait. So the point is that they felt that they had. So one second. So Rashi says the vote is like this. They felt like this. Look, if Yemer himself came and wanted to grab the boat, fine. He has the right to do that. He can ignore everybody else's claims, no problem. It's not Yemer himself. He sent somebody else. So that's the thing. So Rashi says we have this general rule that tofus b'chayv makom shechav l'acherim. Rashi says it applies even if he appointed him a shliach. Only the b'chayv himself has the right to, not somebody else. So therefore, they felt we have the stronger claim to be tofus it, because he actually owes money to us personally. Now Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says, what are you talking about? If he makes him a shliach, then what's the problem? It's the other way around. I'm sorry. Rashi is the one who says that if he makes him a shliach, then it does work. And Tosfos says, based on this story over here, we see that not.
Right.
We see that even if it's... various Mepharshim talk about the different possibilities, including that it might be, for example, that according to Rashi, we could say if he makes him a shliach, it works, but only if he makes him a shliach with Edim. In this case, he hadn't made him a shliach with Edim, or he may not have officially made him a shliach. This guy may have been Yemar's regular gopher. Whenever Yemar needs something done, he has this guy do it, but he didn't officially say in so many words, I'm appointing you a shliach to do this. Or the different Rishonim and Achronim talk about different possibilities. There may be the possibility, I think the Tzitzis mentions this, that in order for it to work, in order for it to be able to work with a shliach, you have to have that you actually write him a hashah, that you write him a power of attorney, saying that he effectively, that you by writing a hashah, what you're doing is you're saying, you're not grabbing it on my behalf, I'm transferring the debt over to you, and therefore you're grabbing it on behalf of yourself. Whereas in this case, he didn't do that.
When you send a shliach to give a get, you don't write a hashah.
That's different. A get is a different kind of thing. Because with a get, you're not causing a chayv to anybody else. The whole point why we're saying over here is because Yemer is not the only creditor. A papa is another creditor, and a Rav Huna of Yeshua is another creditor. So Yemer's shliach does not have the right, we're saying, to do something that's going to prevent them from being able to press their claims. If Yemer himself is doing it, fine. They're all on an equal level. But that's the argument we're having over here between Rashi and Tosfos, is whether it does work if you make a shliach, which Rashi holds that yes, and Tosfos says on the basis of our Gemara it seems that not. And then, like I say, you have these different explanations how Rashi would say that it does. It's not just if you say it may not be just be if you appoint a shliach, you may have to write a hashar, you may have to deal with edim or whatever the case that was missing in this case.
It says that when you have two debtors, two creditors, I'm sorry.
Yes.
One of the creditors tries to grab the other, it's automatically...
But that's fine. If it's the creditor himself, he's entitled to do that. Obedinish
dinah l'nafshei.
A person is allowed...
That's an issue, right?
Right. But here we're talking about he didn't do it himself. He sent a shliach. That's the problem. So they're telling the shliach, you don't have the right to do that and prevent us from pressing our claims. So tafsua inu. So they went and grabbed a hold of the boat. But each one in a different way. Rav Papa mimlach malochi. Rav Papa started rowing with the oars. Rav Huna b'Rei Yehoshua mimtach l'vashla. And Rav Huna b'Rei Yehoshua started pulling it with the tow ropes. A ship in those days was typically more like a barge. It would be towed along. People or animals or whatever would walk alongside the riverbank pulling ropes to tow the boat. So one of them is doing the oars. The other one is doing the tow ropes. Each one argues that I was kind of the whole boat. Each one is arguing that his way of moving the boat is a better kinyan, basically. Yeah, like in Bava Metzia, you have a case where they were two people flying an animal, one's riding, one's pulling the bridle. Yeah. Similar idea. Yeah. Pugbahura Pinchas Ba'ami, so Pinchas Ba'ami meets up with them, Amalabu, and he says, wait a minute, Rabu Shmuel Da'ami Tavaya, we learned yesterday that Rab and Shmuel both say, even if you're going to apply Rab Tarfon's din from our Mishnah, that B'dieved, when you have property that was left over by the guy that's not in the Rishus of the Yisoymim, that it's okay for the Baal HaChayiv to take it. It's not considered taking it from the Rishus of the Yisoymim. But Rav and Shmuel said, that only works if the fruit, for example, is piled in Rishus HaRabim. And what would be the equivalent in the case of this boat over here? The equivalent would be, in the case of a river, no. So what we said yesterday is, we said Rav and Shmuel would say that if the fruit was in a simta, since a simta is a place where you're able to make a kinyan, then therefore the Yisoymim automatically acquired it as soon as the person died, as soon as their father or whoever it is died. Well, so one second. That's the thing. When in the case of a boat on a river, a similar idea would be the equivalent of the Rishus HaRabim would be the middle of the river where the current is flowing. The equivalent of the Simta, the side street, would be near the river banks. So Pinchas Ba'ami is arguing to them that since... No, we don't mean Rishus HaRabim in Shabbos. We mean as far as Kenyan. As far as Kenyan, yeah. So according to Rav and Shmuel, if the boat was in Rishus HaRabim, meaning in the middle of the current, would this work? Was it? I mean, wasn't it in the center? Wasn't it on the side of the river?
That's an accepted.
So we said yesterday like this. We said there was a machlokas on this between Rav and Shmuel on the one hand and Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish on the other. Rav and Shmuel were saying that if the fruit is in Rosh Hasharabim, then there was no kinyan, which we learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a machlokas on that, there's a machlokas on Meroyim on that point, whether it's possible to make a kinyan in Rosh Hasharabim. Assuming that you can't, then if the fruit is in Rishus HaRabim, then the Yisaimim were never koneh in the first place. As opposed to if it's in a simta, since that's a valid place to make a kinyan, then they were koneh right off the bat as soon as the guy died, and therefore nobody else can be tofus it. Whereas then we had Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish saying that even if the fruit was in a simta, then Rabbi Tarfon's din would still apply. We just had a machlokas between Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish whether the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon or not. Or whether B'dieved, the halacha is like Rav Tarfon or not. Anyway, but Rav Pinchas Bar-Ami is telling them, forget Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish. Rav and Shmuel said, and we should assume that halacha is like them, that it only works if it's in Rishus HaRabim. So what are you guys doing? When you grabbed this boat, wasn't it in the simta? Wasn't it by the side? Wasn't it near the riverbank? So they said to him, as a matter of fact, we did grab it while it was still in the middle of the river. And Mepharshim point out also what you would have to have in order for this to work, it would have to be that originally when the guy who owed money died, the boat was already in the middle of the river, so it's already in Rishus HaRabim, and therefore we would say that the Yisoymim weren't automatically cutting it. And then you would have to have that when they grabbed it from Yemeba Choshut Shliach, it also was not yet in, was still in the middle of the river. It would have to be that it was in the middle of the river the whole time. Maybe the Shliach was trying to steer it towards the riverbank and they prevented him from doing that.
It has to be acquired on the side of the river.
No, so only, so like this, they're going to bring it to the side in order to make a kinyan on it, but it had to be that started out in the middle. Also, the Kamei Rava, so in the end, they came to Rava to decide which one of us gets the boat. On the Lahu, and he tells them, what are you guys doing? He says, Kaki Chivari. You white geese, Mishalchi Glimi de Inchi, who strip off people's clothes. In other words, you're taking advantage of people in an improper way. Now, why does he call them white geese? So the white is, white, Rashi says, they were old, they had white hair. The geese, on the side of it here, the Gilyon HaShas from Rabbi Akiva Eger, refers to a Gemara in Brachas. And in Brachas, where it discusses over there all kinds of things, if a person sees such and such in a dream, it symbolizes such and such. One of them is if a person sees a goose in a dream, it symbolizes Chochma. Why? Because the pasuk that the Mishlei that talks about Chochma crying out in the streets, like inviting everybody, come get some Chochma. Chochmas b'chutz paroina. And that's evoked by the idea of a geese which honks very loudly. Of a goose that honks very loudly. So when you see a goose in a dream, it's a simon of Chochma. So he's calling them white geese. He's saying, you like geese, you're very smart, you're Tamar Chachamim, you're white, you have white hair, you're elderly, but is that the right thing to do? You're taking advantage of people. You should know. We learned yesterday, Rav Nachman said that it only works if the tefisa was done while the guy was still alive. In this case, Yemas Shliach didn't even come until after the guy is dead. And you certainly didn't come until after the guy is dead. So you have no rights to it. We're saying the halacha is like Rebbe Akiva, that it only works through the Toif of Mechayim. After the guy's dead, there's nothing to talk about. So it's not you're arguing whether you get it because you were rowing with the oars, or you get it because you were pulling it with the ropes. Neither of you gets it. It has to go to the assignment. It becomes part of their estate. And none of you, neither of you nor Yema Bachoshu, is going to be able to get it. So the Chassam Sofer says, what in fact were they thinking? He explains that actually when we started off the story, we said the guy, the one who owed the money, died and left over the boat. The Chassam Sofer says that he hadn't actually died yet. He was on the verge of death. That's when Yema Bachoshu sent his shliach to go and grab it. They argued. Is that apparently that would be the idea, but they all, Rav Papa and Rav Huna argued to him that even so, you may, as far as the matter of Tfisa, you may be okay, but as far as the matter of Tofis L'Bachayv, Makam Shechav L'Achayv, there's more than one creditor over here, then you don't have you don't have a dog in this fight, basically, because you're only a shliach, you're not the creditor himself. Therefore, now it's true, by the time they went and started arguing with him, the original owner of the boat had died, but they figured, you know what, since he did the original tefisa while the owner was still alive, and we're preempting him on the basis that he's a shliach and we're not, then we should be good. And Rav is telling them, no, it doesn't work that way. If maybe you could argue whether his tefisa was valid or not, but yours certainly wasn't, because it was after he was dead. Yeah. Another case. So now the Gemara is going to kind of be going.
You know that the other party was there after the death. Sure.
Well, according to the Chassam Sofer's explanation, that's the point. The Shliach was there before they died. Rav Huna and Rav Papa and Rav Huna only got there after he died. Yeah. So now the Gemara is going to kind of go the rest of today's daf is going to be kind of going off on a tangent. Now that we've talked about various cases of tfisa, where a person grabs a hold of something to satisfy a debt, we were talking about it in connection with property that belonged to Yisraelim. So now the Gemara is going to kind of digress to discuss a number of similar cases which involve tfisa but don't involve Yisraelim. So number one, Avimi Brei de Rabo. Avimi, the son of Rav Abo, there were people in Bechazoi to whom he owed money. Which I found very odd, by the way, and I didn't find anybody talking about this. Rav Abo and Avimi lived in Eretz Yisrael. Bechazoi is in western Iran. It's a very long distance from Eretz Yisrael. How comes it that Rav Abo's son from Eretz Yisrael winds up owing money to people in Bechazoi, which is probably months travel away? I don't know. Akasha.
Get problems with it.
It would be, you know, in modern terms, fine. I mean, you know, in modern terms, fine. You know, you say it's a two-hour flight. But in those days, when you're talking, you know, when it's a year's trip or something, how likely? Okay, but it happened.
The war was on today. They could have sent a ship.
Okay.
The war of the money moved away.
Okay, that should be. Okay, anyway. So, well, you got to pay back the debt. Shadrin Rabiyat Chama Bre Rava Barabo. So he sent the money with Chama, the son of Rava Barabo. other party, sure enough, he went and paid the creditor of the money. And Amalahu Havalish Shtar, he tells them, no, so okay, give me the shtar. I paid up, so give me the shtar so I can bring it back to Avimi. Amrulay, they told him, actually, Sitroi Ninu. Sitroi means from another side, Meloshan Sitra, like Sitra Dikdusha, Sitra Afra, whatever. Meaning, they're saying like this, you came over here to pay up the debt that for which we have a shtar against Avimi. But you should know, at some other point previously, Avimi borrowed another debt from us, which we don't have a shtar for. We're taking this money that you gave us to satisfy that debt. So we're not going to give it. Doesn't matter. The Ran actually points out, we see from this Gemara, that since we're going to say that they had a valid claim, as we're going to get to in a second, the Ran says, we see from that, that yes, if you owe a person two different debts and you pay him, he's entitled to apply the payment to whichever debt he wants. Obviously, they had to have some kind of proof. Yeah, but they didn't have a shtar. Yeah. So they tell him, Sitroi, Ninu, this money that you paid us, we're applying to something that he owes us from another side. So no, we're not going to give you back the shtar because that debt is still outstanding.
But they have to change the shtar.
No. These are two different loans. He took out a loan in Tufshin Ayin Dalad for X amount of money. He took out another loan in Tufshin Ayin and they didn't write a shtar for that. They just had Adim. He took out another loan in Tufshin Ayin Hay for that they wrote a shtar. So Choma is coming over. They were expecting to pay up the one from Tufshin Ayin Hay. And they tell him that actually this is going to be applied to the Tufshin Ayin Dalad loan. So therefore, we're not going to give you back the note for the Tufshin Ayin Hay loan. That one's still outstanding. Well, also the Kameh did have a bow, so they...
Were the witnesses valid when
he paid? Doesn't matter. Technically, you don't need witnesses when you pay.
But because he's not getting a start back, you want to have witnesses, I'm saying.
No, so okay. Nobody's arguing. When it comes to the actual case, one second. Let's learn the next line, and we'll see. Also, the came to Rabbo, so they came to Rabbo for din Torah. And by the way, before I should point out an interesting question: if Avimi is the debtor over here, how do they come to his father Rabbo for din Torah? So either Avimi is the son of Rabbo. So either it means that they didn't come to him for an actual din Torah; they just came to consult with him, or it means that actually the din is you are allowed to. Yes, if both sides say we agree to have as a dayan somebody who normally would be possible with Dayonis, then that's fine as long as they mutually agree. Anyway, so they come to Rabbo Amalei, and he asks him, "Islach Sadi Dipratinu? Do you Chama? Do you have proof that you actually? Do you have witnesses that you paid him?" Amalei Lo, he says, "No." Amalei, in that case, then those guys from Bechazoi have Migui. Migui di Cholin Loimalei Hayu Dvarim Ma'olam. Since they would be able to say that nothing ever happened, that you have no proof that you even paid them that amount in the first place, then therefore we will accept their argument to say that it was in payment of the first debt, which is a weaker claim. Now the question is, Inyan Shalumi Shliach Mai. What about now? Do we make the shliach? Do we make Chama reimburse Avimi for the fact that now he's losing out? Well, he's losing out because if he had asked them for the shtar, so Tosfos points out like this. Tosfos explains Tosfos points out two things. First of all, we're talking about over here that given that Avimi mentioned to him that this was a loan of the shtar. Then Chama, the shliach, should have said to them first, "Give me the shtar, and I'll give you the money." The fact that he first gave them the money was a mess up on his part. Was a big mistake on his part. Second of all, though, Tosfos asked the question: how is this considered a migri of these guys that they could have said nothing happened, and therefore we believe them to say that he paid back the first debt? Well, on the other, you have Chama opposite them. If they try to claim that you never paid me back, then Chama is one witness opposite them saying that I did pay you back. And he's not an Agav Adavah because we haven't yet gotten to the question of whether he has to pay. One aid is enough to make him swear. So Tosfos explains that we're talking about this story happened at some point during the time of the Gemara. They made the takana called Shvuat Hefes. There's various cases where midaraisa you don't have to. There's various cases you have to swear midaraisa. There's cases where midrabanan you have to swear, and then there's cases where neither of the above. The Amoraim came up with something called shvuat hesis, where even in a case for where up until that point a person wouldn't have had to swear, we make him swear kind of a lower level shvuah. We don't make him hold a sefer Torah or a tefillin or what have you. We just make him swear in Hashem's name or with one of the pinuyim of Hashem. We'll learn about it in shvuas in a couple of years' time, as Hashem. It's called Shvuas Hesis. This is after the Shvuas Hesis. At that point, this even before we discuss the question of whether Chama owes any money, there's still the matter he'd be chai of a Shvuas Hesis. Therefore, already he's in the Geir B'Davar. He has a vested interest in the matter, and therefore we can't. Therefore his contradiction to it wouldn't take away their migui. Other Rishonim have different explanations of how exactly this would work. But yeah,
Shvuas Hesis goes on the Shliach over here.
Yeah, it would go on the shliach. Yeah. So the question now becomes: L'inyan shalumi shliach mai? Does the shliach have to pay back the mishaleach? Does he have to pay avimi? Amar Rabashi chazinan. Well, we have to see the situation. E amale shkil shtar v'habzuzi. If avimi had told him get the shtar from them and then give them the money, mishalim, then he has to pay because he should have because what would have happened if he had told them give me the shtar, I have the money? They would have told him, you know what? This is supposed to go sitroi. It's supposed to go for the original loan, and then he might have had the option of saying, you know what? In that case, I'm not going to give you the money. Let me travel back to Avimi and check with him what he wants to do.
We'll get witnesses.
We'll get witnesses. Yeah, that, right. He could have gotten witnesses. Right. Yeah.
Also, the other question of it is he being paid for his sukkahs? He's not getting paid for his work. Then
even if he, but he, so what? I mean, he's a shomer chinam, but he's still chayav for pshia. He's still high for carelessness. But have Zuzi or Shkil Shtara, but if he told him the other way around, give him the money and then get the Shtar, Loi Mishalim, then he wouldn't have to pay. And Tosfos adds, by the way, certainly if he didn't mention a Shtar at all, then Choma would have a very good claim. He would say, you never mentioned to me anything about a Shtar, so I assume that you trust these guys. How was I supposed to know that there's a problem over here with another loan? One second. So the Gemara points out, anyway, Velohi, that actually this distinction that Ravashi is making between the order is not really correct. It's not so. Bein kach or bein kach mishalim. Either way, Choma is going to have to pay him. De'omalei, because Avimi, the mishaleach, can argue to him, takuni shtarticha v'loi l'habsi. I sent you in order to make things good for me, not in order to mess things up. You did your shlichus carelessly. You should have realized, given that there's a shtar here, that I need the shtar and you don't pay them unless the shtar is forthcoming. And that's where Tosfos points out, if a shtar was never mentioned at all, then he has a valid counterclaim. Look, you never mentioned a shtar, I figured you trust them. But if he knew that there was a shtar, then he should have realized on his own that he has to get the shtar before he pays the money. Always get things in writing before money changes.
Yeah, well, also he wasn't so smart. I mean, Avimi should have known better, not to send someone who is not going to ask for...
He didn't know, that's easy. Okay. Another case. So again, the reason why the Gemara brought in this case is because this is an example of tfisa, that these guys in Beit Chazoi had grabbed the money. They did the equivalent of tfisa. They said, once you gave us the money, it's in our possession, then we're going to use it, and we're going to apply it to the first loan rather than what you thought that it would be applied to the second loan. So another case involving tfisa, hahi itza, to have a mifkede gaba maluga d'shtori. There was a woman who there was left by her for safekeeping a briefcase full of shtoris. Also, Yoshim Kartavi Lamina. So the Yoshim come and are demanding the briefcase from her. Amr Lahu, Mechayim Tefisna Lahu. And she argues back that actually, I have these shtaris from when your father was still alive, actually, because he owed me money, and I'm holding on to these documents against those loans. Now, there is a machloik, there is a different mafoshim discussed over here. What are we talking about? Is she saying that that I'm holding on to the documents which representing the actual loans themselves? Or is she just saying I'm holding on to the Tosfos loans, that she's saying I'm just holding on to the documents basically as pieces of paper, but which also have some value, I was trying to use that as leverage to get not so much the chayv itself, because the chayv to transfer a loan from one person to another is actually not such a simple thing. We'll learn on Amud Beis. There's different details in that, but here, according to this way of looking at it, she's saying I was holding on to these documents just as pieces of paper, but to use them as leverage, to use them as like a mashkin against the actual loans.
Does it
this is a Yarshim from her own children.
No, Yarshim, no. She this guy owed her money. Borrowed money from her. Yeah, Chaim Yankel had borrowed money from her. He died, and now the Yoshim are coming and claiming this bag of documents that he had deposited with her, claiming, as in our Mishnah, like Rabbi Akiva says, that a pikadon that was left with somebody is considered part of the estate. And she's arguing that I had it still while he was alive, while he was alive, I converted it basically from a pikadon into a mashkin against the debt. And therefore, I should be entitled to hold on to that mashkin now. It was never in your possession. It was never in your chazaka. Even we said before that even Rabbi Akiva agrees that tefisa mechayim is good, and that's and on that basis, I want to hold on to them.
Especially if the reason why she has is because the guy who passed away owed her money.
Owed her money, right? Yeah.
Why would they expect her?
No, so that's the thing. That's why Tosfos is explaining that she was just holding them as pieces of paper, basically. So that as a pawn, yeah, as a mashkin, yeah.
That's not like a whole receipt. She has a receipt that the guy's all the money.
No, because the vote would be these shtaris. What it is like this: these shtaris are not on loans that he took out from her. These shtaris are on loans that he took out from somebody else. She has the briefcase full of those in her possession. So for the loans themselves to be transferred to her is not such a simple thing. Tosfos points out you need not only that she has the actual physical documents in her possession, you actually have to have a bill of sale on them. And you'd have to have Mesira, et cetera. But she's arguing, I don't have these to as proof of the loan. The loan that your father took out for me, the loans or loans, whatever, were all milval pair. There weren't documents for those. They were just aiding. I'm holding on to these documents as leverage that your father should have paid me back the loans that he owes me. And then I would give him back these shtaris, and he would deal with his other creditors. So she's arguing I still had them while he was alive. She originated and given to her the pikadon.
Oh.
Yeah. Also, Asoy lekameh de Rav Nachman, so they came to Rav Nachman, Allah, yes, so this fachsadi de tavua minich mechayim, do you have witnesses that the father had asked you back for them while he was still alive, while you have it in the LA? And you hadn't given them to him, which then, if there were such witnesses, then it would mean those edim are proof that this pikadon was converted into a mashkin while he was still alive. And then, yes, then that works. That's Tisa Mechaim. She said, no, I don't have any such witnesses. They were not told him, can't have a Tisa de la Hamisa. In that case, it's considered that the Tisa only took place after he died. Yes, he has physical possession of them at the moment he died, but that physical possession was still as a pikadon. And we learned in the Mishnah that Akiva says that pikadon goes back to Yoshin. So you don't get those as leverage. Trista after death is nothing. What should she have done? She should have declared at some point before Adim that these documents which he gave me as a pikadon, I'm now converting to, I want to use them as a mashkin. I realize he's going to die soon, and if he does, then it's going to go to Yerushim, and I'm not going to have them as leverage. I want to have them as leverage. Therefore, I want to convert that into a mashkin.
Either
Adim
or a
Shah. Yes, well, a Shah would be a miraculous soldier. That's it. Yeah. I would be a soldier. That's different.
The Tosfos says
because when you get down to it, originally she was claiming I have them. The whole point is she's trying to claim I have them. I want to use them as leverage. She can't now retract that and try to use a migu that, you know what, I could have said I don't have them, because that defeats the whole purpose in her argument to begin with. Yeah. It's called the migu mafreya. We don't say migu mafreya. Yeah. Another case. So now we are kind of digressing from the digression. Having talked about tefisa, now we're going on to other cases where din Torah is kind of decided in a somewhat unusual way. based on the dayan's understanding of the situation, where the Shulchan Aruch, as they call it, you know, the supposedly the fifth part of the Shulchan Aruch, dayan's common sense about the situation, rather than the black letter halacha. Case is hahi itzadi chayav shvua beitin of the Rava. There was a certain woman who was mechuyav shvua in the basement of Rava. Rashi said she was mechuyav shvua because somebody had sued her for a loan or for a debt or whatever it based in, and she had denied it. So now she, and there's one aid, for example, against her, so now she has to swear. Other mafarshim, the Ritva, I think, wants to say that it's the other way around, that it may have been a case. There's a number of cases where Jabbanim swear in order to collect money. It may have been one of those cases. Anyway, the problem was, Amr Levas Rav Chista, the daughter of Rav Chista, who is Rav's wife, tells him, Yadayne Badach Shodash Boa. I happen to know that this woman is suspect of swearing falsely. Now, how is she suspect of swearing falsely? Various Rishonim quote from Halachos Gedolos that this woman used to habitually swear in Hashem's name and not keep her promises, or even I think some of them say that she used to swear using Hashem's name a lot, just casually, which shows that she's not careful with these kinds of things. Therefore, so Rava turned around the Shvua to her opposite, to her opponent. There's a din, and there's a din, the Gemara talks about it in a number of places, in the Bavos and in Shvuas. There's a concept called Hafichas Shvua, where if you have Reuben against Shimon, if Reuben is supposed to be swearing, and for whatever reason he's not able to, such as in the case of the Choshur, instead we'll make Shimon swear the opposite Shvua. So in this case, for example, let's say according to Rashi that this woman is supposed to be swearing that I'm free of this debt, that I paid it or I never took it out or whatever. And instead, we'll make her opponent swear that you do owe me the money. And according to the Ritva, the other way around. Well, so far, yeah. Now, so that's case number one. Zimin, another time, Habiyasi Kameh Rapapa Rav Adar Bar Matna, another time Rapapa and Rav Adar Bar Matna were sitting as Talmudim in front of Rava. I saw Abu Shtar Gazeh, they brought a certain star to Rava to decide whether it can be used. Amalei Rapapa and Rapapa says to his Rebbe, to Rava, I have a Shtar Prihu, I happen to know that the star has been paid back. So it's valid to use. Amalei, so Rava asked him, is there anybody else along with you? We could be two aid together on that. Amalei, so Rava tells him, no, I'm the only one who knows about it. Amalei, so in that case, Rava tells him, Apogati Ikamar, yes, it is you. Nevertheless, one aid is nothing. So we can't accept. We can't accept you aiders to say that this star is no good. How about this word? One second. We'll get to that point in a minute. Tosfos points out that in this case the Papa was a relative of one of the obligations. So therefore if he was a relative, then fine, you're right. His testimony as one aid would be enough at least to force the guy to act clear, because he's a relative and he's completely out of the picture. Question is, isn't Papa at least on the same level as your wife, the daughter of Rechista? If you trusted her implicitly that this woman was kosher Ashufa, and therefore you flew around the Shavua, shouldn't you at least trust implicitly your Papa that he knows for a fact that she has paid off? And he says, no, his brother says, in the case of my wife, the daughter of Rechista, I know her very well that she doesn't lie. That one of the Mefarshim explains that it's a bit one. It's one of the governing rights that what he means is I've seen over and over. Rob said, and we're married. I've seen over and over. It's a very difficult situation. She'll go to the utmost extremes and then go through a lot of hardship and whatever, and not say something untrue. So I know I can implicitly trust her. You, Rapapa, yes, you're my Talmud, you're an awesome God, don't be nice, but I haven't checked you out that thoroughly that I know implicitly that you're always telling the truth. He may have a chazaka, but unless you thoroughly checked him out, you can't use his word. If you're using it as Adris, fine. Adris is Adris. You check him out the way you check out a regular aid. But here we're talking about, you're not using it as a matter of Adris, you're using it as a matter of the diamond's sixth sense. Then you can only have somebody who you've checked over and over again know for a fact what they're like. it's basically it is kind of distinct from that moment. It's not that he's saying I suspect you were lying. He's saying until I have had the opportunity to check you out, I can't use what you're saying as my sixth sense over here, as my fifth section of Shonara. There's an interesting story, by the way, from Rabbi Feinstein. He tells about during the last years when he was in Russia, in the 30s, when we all know some of us more than others how difficult things were for Jews in those days. He tells them there were various people. There were older Jews who were living with their children, where the older generation were 100% from the children, not necessarily so much. But there was a real question, can they eat in their children's houses? And it was kind of a matter of pikuach nefesh for a lot of them. Or not, maybe not absolute pikuach nefesh, but pretty close to it. And Rav Moshe said, based on this gemara, that yes, if a father knows for a fact that his son or daughter is not going to misfeed him, even though they themselves may not be particularly careful about kashrus, for example, but they would never go and mislead their parents into eating something safe, then yes, under those circumstances, you can rely on them. That's not really bad. I mean, there's a different story where Moshe talks about it. That's only really the shot of the cock. You know, you can't use that, for example, to say you can eat in a restaurant without a shkacha because you know the guy and he would never mislead you. Just go with somebody else. But here, these guys didn't have a choice again. Amar Papa, well then, based on what Rava is saying, that if you know something for a fact, like here he knew he could accept as an absolute fact what his wife said, and therefore passel this woman from swearing, because he knew. Well, since we're saying milti, that's considered a significant thing in halacha, then I'll give you an example. So an Abamari, for example, then if you have my son Abamar, to keep me with, I know for a fact, I know him well, and I know also, I've checked him out thoroughly, I know he would never lie. Therefore, Karina Shtar Apume, therefore, if a Shtar comes to Beis Din, and he says there's a problem with the Shtar, I would rip it up on the basis of what he says. That's a very strong thing to say, that you would actually dismiss the guy's claim just based on that. Mela, in Rava's case, you're not dismissing the claim at all, you're just saying the other person has to swear. You're just saying the other person, instead of you swearing and being potter, you swear and you collect. But here, you're going to actually dismiss the claim altogether. And of a Reiner start up when we know, okay, what he means is I would weaken Star on the basis of his statement. So what it means, I would weaken it. There's a couple different explanations. Tosfos quotes Rabbi Hanan. So Rashi says it means I wouldn't allow him to collect with that Star, but I wouldn't whip it up either. I'd leave it kind of hanging. So what good is it? The Rosh says in that case, the guy can only go to another Beis Din and use it. Another Beis Din doesn't know Abba Mar so well. They don't have to take his word. They don't have to just take his word for it. So another Beis Din would be able to use it. Just he would say, the Papa would say, I wouldn't decide such a case. So this quote from Ben Chananel, that means that you'd make the Baal Ashtar swear before he collects on it.
Our star was saying that we don't trust them.
No, so we're saying because Abba Mar is saying that there's a problem with the star, Rav Papa is saying I would consider that enough basis to make the guy actually swear before I allow him to collect with it.
Even though
I'm not going to whip it up completely, but I would say that there's something fishy over here.
As long as this guy is trustworthy to swear.
Well, obviously we're talking about where he's trustworthy to swear, yeah. No, first of all, we're not necessarily saying he's saying that Adam Meyer says there's some problem with the shtar. What's the some problem? There could be a number of possibilities. Whatever it is, fine. Ultimately, it's not actual edus. For example, like Joseph had said, Adam Meyer is a relative of one of the Balajinim. So what he's saying is not actual legal edus. That's we have the case of Batu Chist also. She's a woman. She's not a legal aide. Rava is not using her as an aide. He's using her as, I know for a fact that she always tells the truth. I mean, I'm using her as a Chistro Hanara. Same thing over here. He's saying I'm using Abba Meir as a Chistro Hanara. Another Beis Din wouldn't necessarily. By the way, the Rambam, the Rif and the Rambam talk about that even though we have this Gemara is saying, and we're going to have examples on other days also, that we see from this that a Dayan is allowed to use his discretion in cases like this. Nevertheless, the Rambam says in later times, and in the times of the Rishonim already, when the Pesukim are not always such experts and so scrupulously honest, then no, you have to stick to black letter law as it is in the Gemara or later on the Shulchan Aruch or whatever. We don't allow for this idea of the discretion of the Dayan.
Okay.
Another case, he it's the chayv shvur beit din. As a practical matter, I mean, when we say we don't allow for the discretion, we mean as far as deciding the actual din torah. I mean, if the dayan has reason to suspect there's something fishy over here, you know, he has. There's always different methods you can use, you know, to try and you know, you have all the famous stories, also all the famous rabbanim, you know, who trick the guy into giving him, yeah, into telling him the truth or whatever. Yeah, that's not a problem. But to actually pass the din according to that. Another case, there was a woman who was chayav shvua in the beis din of a bibi barabaya. Amalahu havu baldin. So her opponent in the din torah said, case she has to swear. Case if it's a shtab of a masa, I want her to go and swear in the city. Even the first of our different explanations, what it means in the city where I live, in the city where we both live, whatever. The point is, we know a lot of people there. Actually, the mixtafo moya, because she may be embarrassed to swear falsely in front of people that she knows, and then that way she'll admit. So no, the din torah is taking place in a bibi bar by his
beit din. All the wants to come and hear how she says.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, but the din in those days were public things. Yeah. So she says, fine, I'm willing to, but peacefully zachvasa, write out for me a shtar zchus, dekim eshtabana yahavimi, that this shtar should say that once I've sworn, this shtar should say basically, Plonis swore in Beis Din on such and such a day, that she's potter from this taina or whatever. And after I actually swear, you'll have Adim sign it. Or different Mepharshim talk about is it that she's saying give it to a third party, put an escrow meanwhile, or is she saying give it to my opponent, but it won't be signed by the Adim until I actually swear. Whatever it is, prepare it for me in advance, please. Amalu Rabbi Barabaya Kiskola. So Rabbi Barabaya says, fine, go ahead and write it for her, and we'll put it in an escrow, or we'll sign it afterwards, and whatever. Yeah, and once the shvua is done, then we'll give it to her, sure. Amar Papi, or Papi says, how can you do such a thing? Mishum da afisu mi muloi. What is it? Because you come from muloi, amrisu mili muyasa, therefore you say cut off things. Muloi, Rashi says, means that Rabbi Barabaya is descended from the family of Eli. We learned in the family of Eli Akkoyim, the Rebbe of Shmuel Navi. We learned that the Pasuk mentioned in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, and we learned it in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah and also in Yevamos, that because of the Averis of Eli's sons, Chofni and Pinchas, the Abish descent in Nebuah, first with Elkanah, later on with Shmuel, that the family is going to be punished for generations to come, and among other things, all of them are going to die young. And we learned in Rosh Hashanah and in Yevamos that the way out of it, they can't take care of it, the Zevach of Mincha, but they can take care of it by learning Torah and Milas Chasadim. So the Papi is saying to him, you come from this family of Muloy, of these cut-off, weak people. Therefore, you're saying such a weak Svara. Now, why is he using such a strong expression? The Shalom HaKadosh said, he's telling him like this. We know that the Takana for your family, for Beis Eli, is to learn Torah. Torah and Milas Chasadim. In that case, you have more of a responsibility than the average person to make sure that you're learning Torah the right way and not making mistakes in Halakha. Otherwise, you're missing the point. You're making things worse for yourself. And the Chavis Yor adds that interesting thing. He says, what's the expression muloi? There's a couple different explanations that we're trying to give of the word muloi. He says a drash on it. Muloi is Rosh HaKeves, rearranged by Daber Hashem El Moshe Leimer, which is the introduction to many of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So he's telling him, you come from Muloi, you come from a family who's responsible more than anybody else to be careful with the team that by Yad Vashem Moshe Lamer, be careful, you're not saying something that's off the wall there. Yeah. How can you say that you write out the star in advance? For Amar Rav, didn't Rav say, I shouted the Dayani, a confirmation on a shtar, a henpik, which we learned about earlier in the second parak, that a shtar is brought to Beis Din, and Beis Din certifies that the signatures in it are valid. So if that's written out, if it's written out before the Edim actually go and recognize and certify their signatures, psula, then it's possible. Alma mechvi kashitra, because the problem is it looks like a lie. How can you say that? We checked out these signatures, we had the Edim come in front of us and tell us that these are the signatures when they didn't actually come yet. So, you have the same problem over here. You're going to write out for her a document that says that on Yud Iyar she swore. Yud Iyar hasn't come yet. She hasn't sworn yet.
She said
write out when she sent her to Bibi's Beis Din, write it out for me now, and that way after I swear it'll be signed and it'll be given to me.
That's
the problem. Obviously, you can't even write it for him.
Why can't you write it before?
Because it's Mexican Shikra. It looks like a lie. You're writing out something that hasn't yet happened. You know, but...
Do you think that the girl had a lie?
No. We're not... Her cheshbon was just that this way, after I go to the city to swear, I don't want to have to shush back to the Bibi's based in to get this shower. I'd rather get it in advance.
That's the whole thing.
Nothing up her sleeve. She just didn't want to have to shush back.
What if you write it and they sign it later after she...
That's what we're saying. That's what the topic is objecting to. Just the writing itself is masochism. Just the writing, what if you write it now and sign it later? That's the whole point. That's what she wanted them to do. And her poppy is saying that's no good. No, but it's still the writing that she swore. She didn't swear yet. It's not a matter of enforceable or not. Her poppy is objecting that you see that the dayanim are not supposed to write something that appears like a lie. You need to write in advance when it didn't actually. Well,
at that point.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a matter of however long it takes to travel to that city. By the way, I mean, when we... 25
minutes to get there. But at that
point in time... I thought she was over here, right?
No. She said... her Baal Din told her, I want you to swear in our city, because that way you'll be embarrassed.
It's written.
Yeah.
It's written.
By the way, for this reason, for a similar idea, that the truth is, the Gemara is going to say the Gemara is going to say in a minute that that's not such an issue really. But the truth is, when we write Subbath nowadays, for example, you see that when we get to the part of Subbath that says the Kanaina that we made the Kinyan, they leave it blank, or they leave it blank and write it in only after the Kinyan is done, or they leave part of the word blank and write it in afterwards.
They do the Kinyan on the spot.
No, the ksuba is written usually beforehand. The ksuba, especially when you have people have fancy ksubas that are handwritten, or you know, so the whole thing is written ahead of time. But you don't want to write the kanena that we actually made a kinyan, because that would be Mexican shikra, and therefore they leave out that word and fill it in afterwards, or fill in at least part of the word afterwards. Yeah. However, the Gemara says, Valesa, actually this isn't correct. Mitzvah of Nachman, and we see that because of what Rav Nachman says. The Amar of Nachman. Now, the Mishnah in Gittin discusses like this. We know the concept that a get has to be written l'shmoy v'l'shmar. It has to be written specifically for the sake of the people, of the couple that's getting the divorce. Rav Meir holds that not. Rav Meir holds that it can be written whenever. It can be written even for practice or whatever, as long as it's signed by the Edim, l'shmoy v'l'shmar. The that's what he holds.
So the
get, the halacha is like the chachamim. The actual get itself has to be written l'shmoy v'l'shmar. For example, if imagine you have, for example, I mean, there's a number of examples of this, but let's say, for example, the sefer is writing a get for practice, and he writes a get that on such and such a day, Avraham divorced Sarah, and in Brooklyn, etc., and later on, a couple come to Beis Din later that day, hey, my name Avraham is Avraham, my name is Sarah, we wanted to get divorced anyway, let's use it. No good, because it wasn't written specifically with them in mind. But according to the mayor, that's not necessary. According to the mayor, it just has to be signed, Mishma.
Well, now
they have the nusach for the... Yeah, forget about the nusach. The nusach is standard anyway, but that's not the point. The actual, when the sofer starts writing, he has to have in mind that I am writing this again. L'shem Avraham and L'shem Sarah. Specifically, yes. Yeah.
Usually they do it when the two
parties
are there.
Well, they usually, yes, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, but...
No, they
have to be there for the writing of the first line, but they have to be there for the writing of the first line. The husband and wife technically don't have to be there at all, really. But as a practical matter, usually they are, but yeah. The point is the cipher has to actually have them in mind, but a mayor holds that not. And the Mishnah says, and the Gemara says there in Omer Hoyer of Meir, that a mayor used to say, I feel a motzei ba'ashpa, even if the husband finds a get with the appropriate names in the garbage, v'chosmei v'nosnila, and he has Adim sign it on behalf of him and his wife, and he gives it to her kosher, then it's kosher. So we see, according to the mayor, the thing can have been written in advance, that it says that Abraham divorced his wife Sarah on the date. And the fact that it wasn't written for them is not a problem. We don't consider it mechtek a shikra, that looks like a lie. Even the Rabbanan, when they're arguing with the mayor, it's only in the case of a get that they're arguing. It's written in civil lishma, because a get is a special din that has to be written in lishma. But when it comes to other starters, they do agree that it can be written in advance. That's what the Gemara is pointing out, that your papi is objecting you can't write out this document in advance. We see, based on what Nachman said, that that's not a problem. And how do we know that Abanan amoyed it to him? If you have a shtar that you borrowed money with it and then you paid it back, you can't borrow again with it, even if it's all on the same day. So you borrowed $100 at 9 o'clock in the morning, you paid it back at 12. At 1 o'clock, you come to borrow from the same guy another $100. You can't reuse the same shtar, because the shibud, the lien that was created by the shtar, has already been taken away, has already been removed by the payment, and therefore you can't reuse the same shtar. Time of the nimchol shibud, which is, you see, the problem is only because the shibud was nimchol. Avol mechtek shikra loychashin, but we're not worried about this mechtek shikra issue. So we see from that mechtek shikra is not really an issue. Yes, and the second mill is mill out there, exactly.
The expression that he said was a sharp expression, even though it was what was said to...
So Rapapi could use that expression, right, but it turns out, according to what we're saying now, that actually the Bibi was correct. You could indeed write such a shtar in advance like that.
We have no proof that Chamin thinks like this.
Well, that was the proof that we just brought. Ravasi said, we see that you can't reuse the shtar because Nimcha Shibode, not because, well, obviously, Mechtek Shikra is not an issue. Tosfos, by the way, earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara used the statement of Rapapi as a factual statement that you're not allowed to write the henpeh before the Edim actually come. And Tosfos asks, over there, according to our Gemara, it comes out it's not according to Halacha anyway. How could the Gemara use it as a challenge? So Tosfos answers that yes, that happened. Tosfos answers that yes. Sometimes the Gemara will do that. Sometimes the Gemara will use something that ends up being refuted as a challenge anyway. That's one answer, and then Tosfos brings another answer that l'chila we should be careful about that. But b'di'eved, it's fine to write in advance. I guess in this case, the idea would be it would be considered a b'di'eved thing because she's saying I don't want to have to schlep to the city over there to swear and then schlep back here to the base to get the shtar. The henpeh is where the Beis Din writes out that this shtar was brought to us and the Edim and we certified the signatures of the Edim. Either the Edim themselves came and testified that these are their signatures, or we compared it with other known signatures of theirs that we have on file, or other people came and whatever. The Rambam explains there's five different ways of being mekayim it. But yeah, kiyum shtaris it's called it. Another case, Hahu Gabra de Afkid Shev Maganista de Tidy Vistina, Beir Miyasha, Babreder of Shurban Levi. A certain person had deposited for safekeeping seven diamonds, which were wrapped up in a handkerchief, and he deposited them with Rabbi Miyasha, the grandson of Rabbi Shurban Levi. Shach of Rabbi Miyasha, and Rabbi Miyasha died, Velay Pakin, and he didn't have a chance before he died to give a tzavah to tell his household, to tell the members, to tell his heirs, What's supposed to be done with the various things around the house? What happened? How did he die so suddenly? So in the back of the Gemara, the Mitzvah Esav brings an interesting thing. There's a story that's told in the Medrash and in one or two places in the Yerushalmi that in some places the Gir says it was Rabbi Shurban Levi's son, in some places it's the grandson. So he connects it with this over here and says that the correct Gir says evidently is his grandson. Rabbi Shurban Levi's grandson, where the story goes, was one time had something stuck in his throat. It was very dangerously sick. A guy comes, one of the early Christians from those times comes and heals him by saying the name of Yoshka over him a couple of times. He heals him with that kind of faith healing, like
Shimon Forsh.
No, not Shimon Forsh. The name of Yoshka. The name of Isaiah. So Rabbi Shor ben Levi, when Rabbi Shor ben Levi hears about it, he says, you know what? It wasn't right to do that. You should have been rather willing to die on Al Kiddush Hashem rather than be healed in such a way. And sure enough, he passed away. So the mitzvah Eisam connects that with
himself.
Rabbi Shor ben Levi said that on his grandson, that you should have been rather willing to die rather than have this guy, rather than have this min say Eisha's name over you and cure you that way. I thought it worked okay. You know, the Eibishter sometimes allows these things in order to test people. Yeah. But he should have told her. He should have waved the guy away. Whatever. He should have. Anyway, so the mitzvah Eisam connects that with our Gemara over here. Why did Rabbi Nasha pass away so suddenly? Because he's a grandson from that story. Anyway, so he didn't have a chance before he passed away to tell what's supposed to be done with the things around his house. So now the question is, this guy is coming and claiming his jewels. Are they in fact his, or maybe they belong to Rabbi Nasha? Also, so they came to Rabbi Nasha. He says like this: Chada, number one, the Adina Beber Rabbi Nasha Babre Rabbi Shoban Levi the Leomid. Number one, we know that he's not rich. He doesn't own those kinds of things. That itself makes logical reason to assume that they're not his, but rather they were deposited.
Like he's a nuba.
Vaoid, second of all, this guy who's claiming them is giving a simon on them.
Right.
Yeah. However, the Gemara points out, this only works if this guy who's claiming them is not regularly going in and out of Rabbi Yasha's house. If he regularly goes in and out, then you might have to be concerned that somebody else might have given the pardon. And he saw it and is now falsely trying to claim it for himself. Okay, it shouldn't be out in it, but still, somebody might see it. Somebody might see it around your house. Tosfos points out, by the way, that if Rabbi Yasha himself had been alive, and this guy is coming to claim his jewels, Rabbi Yasha could have counterclaimed, it's true, I'm not rich enough to be having 7 jewels wrapped up in a handkerchief, but I found them. It would be a valid, that would be a valid claim that basically might be willing to accept. But basically, maybe. But because he's dead, now it's true, we say that Beis Din is responsible for the Yisayimim, and they're responsible for coming up with claims that Yisayimim can use in Beis Din, because they may not know their father's affairs, but it has to be reasonable things, not far-fetched things like that, that he found 7 jewels like that. So therefore, once we have these two facts, that the chazaka, that he wasn't rich, and the fact that the guy offered simanim, that those two, you need both those things together, though. But you need both those things together, because one without the other wouldn't work. If there's only a chazaka that you still have, it still might have been somebody else. And if it's only simanim, okay, but still, you might have found them or something. After Rabbi Yasha passed away, I guess.
I guess.
All right, I guess it's my time now, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.